Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, finding accommodation for up to 200,000 refugees in the middle of a housing crisis. Minister Dara O'Brien will be here shortly. Aggressively restricting cars in Dublin. City manager Owen Keegan explains why he wants cars out of the heart of the capital. Why is Hamilton the musical on the junior cert and should it be there? Owen McGee rises to the challenge of saving €2,000 for an average family with just 60 minutes on the clock and what makes for a great chipper. Is it the vinegar, the quality of the brown paper bag, or just how they slice the spuds? We're going to discuss it all later. But if you know what makes a chipper stand out from the rest, do text us 51551. Email today, cb@rte.ie, or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. First, this morning, we say good morning and welcome to the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien. And Minister, the Irish Times is reporting this morning that the bill for refugee accommodation, health and education, it could hit €1.7 billion for 2022 alone. Now, what have you been asked to do? Is it up to the Department of Housing to secure all the accommodation that's needed?
Yeah, well, the initial response to this humanitarian crisis has obviously been led by the Department of Children and our non-governmental organisations such as the Irish Red Cross, but we're supporting them in the Department of Housing. The initial accommodation response for emergency accommodation is with Roderick O'Gorman. We're identifying further measures that we're going to have to take in the short to medium to long term. There's no doubt, Claire, if you look at it, by the 28th of March, we had nearly 15,000 Ukrainians seeking refuge here, and that's increasing every day. I was on to Dublin Airport myself yesterday, and there were hundreds of more Ukrainians coming in, and it's right and proper that we do everything we can to assist them. So I'm planning within my own department, with my own senior officials group, I've been asked to do so by the Taoiseach, around looking at other measures about how we can expedite delivery of more permanent or semi-permanent housing. And that involves a couple of things, like looking at emergency planning powers that I could use potentially under the Planning Act, looking at how we can shorten procurement, because one of the issues, obviously, when we go to build new estates or refurbish existing homes as well as the area of procurement and how long that takes. And there are some emergency provisions available to us there. Looking also at, you know, what is empty out there, what voids are there. And we've done well over the last couple of years in bringing back empty social homes back into use, over 6,000 over the last 2 years. There are more, and I'm looking to see, can we expand that programme? But first and foremost, the response is to make sure that everyone who comes in gets fed, gets medical attention, gets good emergency accommodation. Some of that will be for a number of weeks or a number of months, and then we've got to look at the next stage.
Your job is the next stage. Have you worked out what it's going to cost you, what it's going to cost you in terms of your budget?
Not quite as of yet. We're working through. Michael McGrath brought a memorandum to Cabinet yesterday that was reported upon, looking at the potential cost into the future of looking after our Ukrainian friends and all the needs that they will have. And you could be looking, you've mentioned a figure of $1.7 billion, that could rise, depending on how many people come in, to about $2.5 billion. So, like, we've got to be very clear with people. There is a financial cost. We know that. I think the Irish people are supporting what we're doing, you know, to make sure that these people have been brutally attacked by Putin and by Russian forces can come here and can get safe refuge and have safe harbour here.
Yeah, a proportion of that budget, whatever it may be, and as you say, it may go higher than $1.7 billion, are you expecting that to come from the Department of Housing?
Yeah, well, we'll all have to play our part. I've also got to do this in the context of making sure we deliver housing for all, which has already costed a €4 billion a year, as you know. We've discussed that many times on your show. So will there be additional costs to it? Yes, there potentially will be. And if there is, we will seek those additional funds. One other important thing we're doing right now, if I might say, is we have done a trawl of all the local authorities of larger properties that could be owned by other state agencies or indeed, you know, could be churches, could be private entities and commercial premises, about, you know, how many of them around the country could be relatively easily converted into semi-permanent or permanent accommodation. And so far, we're working through about 500 on that list of some quite significant properties. They would be refurbishments. So I'd see a lot of what we're going to be doing is taking maybe old commercial stock, old state stock, and converting that into be that apartment or homes and that.
So somebody there are could options be going from a tent in Gormanstown to a converted church.
Sorry, Claire, I missed that.
Someone could be going from a tent in Gormanstown, which may be their emergency accommodation, to a converted church or a converted commercial premises.
Potentially. And, you know, we have never received an influx of people in such a short space of time as this before. But I think the initial response has been good. It has been efficient, to be fair. We have really stepped up to the mark. So, yes, we're going to have to look at how we can convert existing properties that are there. New build properties do take time. With the best will in the world, if one had a clean site and all the services in place and everything, and if you were to expedite off-site construction and that, you could be looking at 9 to 12 months.
Okay,
so the reality of it is, what do you do in the meantime?
I'm just looking at how this plan might work. So say you have to go for a short period of time to a campsite. Gormanstown, we know, is being looked at, and we're told...
Let's be fair right now, Claire, that will be an option that's available
okay,
to the
emergency.
That's not the norm right now.
But you go then potentially to a church or a commercial premises. Where do you go then? Or is the intention to use that commercial premises or church in the medium to long term?
We've done some scoping on this. It's a good question as well as to how many additional homes should people stay here longer and this war be more protracted. And if we see the devastation that has been vested upon some of the cities there, they'll be, you know, uninhabitable for a number of years. So it is more than likely that many of our Ukrainian friends that are here are going to stay for a sustained period of time. So we are going to have to look at providing permanent housing solutions in that space. Some of the research that we've done and work that we've done in relation to planning for this, we could potentially require up to an additional 35,000 homes over the period of time should we be looking at permanently accommodating. So right now we're getting up to, we need 33,000 homes per annum, as you know, under the Housing for All plan, which we're well on our way to delivering, and we're increasing output every week, and this year will be a good year for delivery. But the additional requirement could very well be another 35,000 homes. Now, some of them will be good refurbishments, will be refurbishments of vacant homes that are there. They won't all be new builds.
So you're looking at 70,000 new homes that may be needed over the course of a year. And
no,
we're in a time of hyperinflation.
No, Claire, not 70,000, just if I could explain. We're looking at getting to an average of 33,000 homes per annum prior to the Ukrainian crisis, okay? That's what we're getting to. The addition on that is not another 35,000 per annum. It could be, from the work that we've done so far in analysing the situation, could be an additional 35,000 homes over that period. So that would be split over a 5-6 year period, potentially. And that would be a use of both new and existing stock.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure this out because we're not sure how many are going to come.
Charlie
McConnell said up to 200,000. But say we reach that figure in the short term, where do those people go?
Well, so far, to be fair, Claire, I think the response has been very good. We've had on or about 15,000 people coming in, and many of those children, the state and its agencies, and have responded really well. We've ensured that everyone has accommodation. We're working through the pledges that many generous Irish people have given, the thousands of pledges that people have had of rooms in their homes or vacant homes, and we're working through all that. And there will be a requirement then to convert empty properties, which could be empty residential, could be converting empty commercial to a very, very good standard.
Okay.
And then we've also got to, if I might say, to look to continue to exit people who are already homeless on our homeless list into permanent accommodation. So no one's saying this is easy. No one's saying this is a challenge and adds further to the challenge that we have. But the initial response has been very good. The planning that has been managed and led by the Taoiseach and that all of us have been feeding into has been going very well, and it's organised. And we'll do everything we can to respond appropriately to this humanitarian crisis.
What about modular homes? Are they on the agenda? Where will they be? Who will build them? What will they cost?
Yeah, like any type of housing, there's nothing off the table, firstly, okay? There has been this... there is an impression abroad sometimes that modular homes will be the solution to everything, and they have a role in it, but they're not. Off-site construction can play a very significant role. We have 5 or 6 companies in Ireland that are already providing off-site construction. I visited many of them. I was in Limerick recently where they're building homes off-site and then bringing them in and dropping them on. Will there be a requirement for some temporary type accommodation through modular homes? I think so, yes.
And where will they be? Where will you put them?
Well, what I am asking our local authorities, who've been doing a really good job here because they've a lot on their plate already. They've already scoped empty properties, but I've also asked to identify serviced vacant sites that might be that are around the country that we all know, be they zoned or unzoned. And we're going to have to take some decisions around that, because if we're to provide these additional homes that we've just discussed, we're going to need sites to do that. So when you ask me where, they could be anywhere around the country, but we will have a certain criteria around site selection. Obviously, they've got to be serviced with water, wastewater and electricity, etc. They've got to have good road access. You don't want people isolated.
You don't want people isolated, but clearly it's going to be cheaper to put those in areas outside Dublin than it will be inside Dublin.
I would think, Claire, that all across the country, and this has happened already, where Irish people have opened their homes, have opened their arms to our Ukrainian refugees, and of course it will be all across the country, mm-hmm. including in Dublin.
Now,
and I would expect a spread of that, of the accommodation that's required right across the country.
So you know now that there will be people listening to this going, well, isn't it amazing what you can do when you're under serious pressure here with people arriving into the airport every day, and why wasn't this done for the people in Ireland who have been waiting for years in the midst of a housing crisis for somewhere to live?
Well, there may be someone would say that, but I think in fairness, if anyone looked with a cold eye on what's been done over the last 2 years, and particularly since September with the launch of the Housing for All plan, is that we're making, prior to the Ukraine war, the single biggest intervention in housing ever in the history of the state. We're bringing back vacant properties already. Last year, over the last 2 years since I've become minister, we brought back over 6,500 vacant social houses back into use.
But what we're seeing today, given what you said over the last 10 minutes, is that there was scope to do more.
No, well, Claire, there's always scope to do more, okay? But let me say this to you. This, if you look at what I announced today in relation to our social housing delivery in 2021, we've delivered a significant number, well over 5,000 new builds, which is substantially more than was done in the previous year. But in total, over 9,100 new social homes in 2021, in a year where our construction sector was shut down to April because of COVID. And that's a 17% increase on the year before. So nearly 1,400 new social homes delivered in 2021 versus 2020.
Yeah, but you're looking today at converting these properties that you've just explained, the churches, the commercial properties, the state-owned properties. You're looking at doing that. You're looking at putting modular homes on sites, and you're identifying sites because of the refugee crisis. Are you saying that you hadn't been doing that up to now?
No, I'm not saying that, and we actually have been. I was in St. Joseph's in Waterford with Minister Mary Butler just a couple of weeks ago, where we're converting an old convent there that has been derelict for a long number of years, a very significant site in the middle of Waterford City, to 72 apartments for our seniors. We're through our lease and repair scheme. We've been bringing back hundreds of units right across the country. I've signed planning exemptions, as you know, to bring back vacant commercial premises and convert them into residential, like we've been doing very successfully in Limerick and Waterford and Dublin. So this has been happening. We've been ramping this up. What we're going to have to do now, because of the most serious humanitarian crisis since World War II, is of course ramp that up. No question about that, and actually face up to the situation that we find ourselves in. And why do we do that? Because we're doing the right thing by opening our country to these people who have been brutally persecuted by Russia and by President Putin.
Just on Russia, we know there was a coordinated move among several EU countries to expel Russian diplomats yesterday, 4 people asked to leave Ireland. But the ambassador, isn't he responsible for the work of the staff in his embassy? So if they were really up to something, like spying, let's say, why are we allowing him to remain here if he's their boss?
Well, I think you'll understand that as a government minister the custom and practice being that we wouldn't comment specifically on any of the specific decisions that have been taken by the Department of Foreign Affairs. Suffice to say that the expulsion of the 4 members of the embassy was done on the basis of good intelligence information that the department had. They believe that it's an appropriate response. Government do as well. It is important, though, too, Claire, that the channels of communication between ourselves through our ambassador in Moscow, through the Russian ambassador here in Dublin. We have Irish citizens still in Russia. We saw how important that was.
The risk is now. The risk is now that our diplomats could be asked to leave Russia as a result of this.
Some may, in a proportionate response. But let's remember, just a few short weeks ago, there was a clamour. Understandably, people were angry, and really angry, and I was too, to expel the ambassador, which would have cut off, which would have led to the expulsion of the Irish ambassador too. Let's be straight about it. I think what this decision, and that wouldn't have served any good purpose for anyone, particularly for our own citizens who are currently still in Russia and who are requiring consular assistance through our own embassy. This move by government is a proportionate move. It's based on information that the department have obviously assessed very, very carefully, and that has been explained to the Russian embassy as to why that has been done. I don't think I'll say any more than that.
In the Irish Independent today, it's reported that the government has privately conceded that the new auto enrolment pension scheme, which was signed off by cabinet, is needed for the increasing number of older people who will still be renting when they retire. Is that right?
I think it's needed for a number of reasons. I speak for someone who used to work in pensions in my previous life before politics, is that the coverage, particularly in the private sector, of pension coverage is less than half of the workforce.
And we know that, but can you confirm that this is the case?
Cabinet have been told and have accepted
that the number of people who will be renting when they retire now means that this auto-enrolment is needed.
I would actually say that is not the reason for auto-enrolment to come in. Can I be really clear on that? And that's what I was trying to say.
It's one of the reasons, is it?
There's many reasons. And the main one is that people, that we've got to try to encourage people to make provision for their income at retirement, and there is a reality.
To pay rent
and to live, Claire, yes. But this is not, if you're trying to say this is the reason the scheme has been brought in.
No, one of the reasons. So the report in the Independent isn't wrong.
Can I just explain the rationale, if I could, please? Because we don't have, less than 50% of people who are working in the private sector have any type of pension at all. Okay, and the best way to do that is that people join pension schemes earlier in their life, particularly at 2021. And the auto enrollment piece helps. A very small contribution at the start, early in your life, matched by the employer. And the state now are saying, really significant move by Heather Humphreys and by government.
Yeah, and we understand that. But this memo that's reported is really important for your department, because it says a lot about the housing strategy in this country, that the scheme will be particularly important as home ownership rates are in decline and an increasing number of older people need enough income to meet the cost of rent during their retirement. That's an extraordinary situation for the government to be in.
Okay, firstly, it's about providing pension coverage for people, that people actually ensure that they, as best as possible, aren't just depending on the state pension. And why is that? Because they'll need money to live, indeed to pay rent, to pay mortgages, to buy food, all of those normal things. Home ownership rates have plummeted in Ireland over the last 20 years. I've said that on your show many times. And that's why in Housing for All that I am pushing very, very hard to encourage home ownership through our affordable housing schemes, also through our affordable rental scheme, where we're going to have hundreds of additional tenancies in place where people are paying less than 50% of what market rents are. So there is no question that as people get older, and if they're still renting and they haven't made provision, for whatever reason, I'm not blaming them for that, that's not the case, but just have not been in a position to make provision for rent, that is going to be a big issue into the future. But we're tackling that a number of ways. Cost rental will have a very significant impact on that, whereby you're only paying rent to cover the cost of development and maintenance of the apartment itself. That didn't exist 12 months ago. And in 12 months, you know, we've been able to bring in a whole new form of housing tenure. So we do need to increase pension coverage. It's a very good move by Heather Humphreys. Many other states, I've looked at this going way back. We've New Zealand, Australia and others have been doing this for over 20 years. Like, I remember being in the Dáil in 2007, where there was a green paper on pensions being discussed in 2007 about auto-enrollment. Okay. So it's good that we're doing it now.
I want to ask you about COVID, because our colleague Micheál Lehane reported yesterday that Cabinet didn't even discuss the rising COVID rates across the country. Is that right?
COVID is discussed every single day within government. We had a very full agenda yesterday, The Minister for Health was there too. COVID wasn't specifically on the agenda, but COVID is discussed every single day within government. I know that Minister Donnelly, in fairness, has been working on this with the CMO. We've had a really difficult 2 years everyone has had coming through COVID. Obviously, there's...
Yeah, but we can't pretend it's over, because the emergency medics are saying it's the worst they've seen in their career because of the absentee rates and the number of COVID cases coming through the department. There was an emergency department task force meeting on Monday. The minister wasn't at it.
Well, look, what I'd say to you is this. I know that Minister Donnelly, his office and the office of the CMO are really working closely together and collaboratively on setting up the COVID advisory group to provide ongoing information and advice. We know COVID hasn't gone away. Of course it's not. I know many people who have COVID. All of us do. There's lots of people. Thankfully, it is not nearly as severe if we go back to Delta and prior to that. But yes, it's still serious. It's still having an impact, a serious impact on our hospital services and also in particular on staffing, where people are picking up COVID and it's reducing our capacity to
it's
do
just
that.
It's extraordinary because the Emergency Department Task Force meeting on Monday, the outcome of that was that hospitals are overwhelmed, according to the people who work there. They say people's lives are at stake. The CEO of the HSE says we need to turn the tide ASAP, and no one even brings it up at Cabinet.
No, well, Claire, I think that, look, no one can say that this government have, tackled COVID on behalf of the people, I think in a very effective way. And if anyone looks at that in balance over the last 2 years, we've done that. And it's been tackled, rightly so, with the emergency measures that were needed. Very tough decisions made through. They were criticised by many through the course.
It's not a past tense issue, though.
No, but what I'm trying to say is that the track record of government in dealing with COVID, I believe, does stand up to scrutiny and continues to do so. We're in a different wave of COVID right now. It is not a question. We know it is not gone. Minister Donnelly knows it's not gone, and it's still a number one priority for him and for government.
And what's your own view on whether the mask mandate should be reintroduced?
Look, I was at the match last Saturday when my daughter got on the dart to go over to Lansdowne Road, and I'd say about 60% of people on the dart, including myself and my daughter, were wearing masks. And I think really a lot of people, if you go into shops, if you go into indoor settings, I see lots of people wearing masks.
So they don't need to be told through legislation?
Well, I don't think they do. I actually don't think they do. But if we get advice from the CMO or from the advisory group that mask mandates need to come back in, of course we'd consider that. But people have been living with this terrible disease for the last, for the last 2 years. And people, have understand what needs to be done. And I've seen that myself, as I said, when I'm on public transport or in shops and that, where people are wearing masks inside. Does it need the government or a mandatory mask mandate to make sure another percentage wear masks? I'm not so sure. I think people know that this is spreading right now, that the best thing to do if you're indoors or in a congested setting is to put a mask on. And people are used to doing that.
Okay.
And I would encourage them to do so.
Minister, thank you for joining us.
You're
this
more
morning.
Than welcome,
Minister
Claire.
Dara O'Brien.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.